It's Tuesday night, and you're listening to the Ooze Illuminous Edition with your hosts, Rotten Biohazard and Jason Sorrell. What's going on, man? How you doing tonight?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Still getting a lot of compliments on the tattoo I did for Silver Dot. A lot of people that I've even run around in town who know me from Facebook and everything else, they've seen it, and they're kind of stoked about it. I'm looking at maybe talking Silver Dot into getting a little bit of a touch-up, doing a little bit more work to it.
Dude, talk to me getting him color, man. Come on, color.
I was thinking color, but he's more into black and gray. So I'd like to add a little bit more tone to it as far as the black and gray is concerned. Bump up some of the lines a little bit. But, yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, what he thinks he can take. I mean, he toughed it out for 4.5 hours, but the back, especially along that spine, it's no joke getting tattooed there. And I focus more on trying to getting the ink in and getting the ink to hold the first time around rather than, you know, having a light hand. So, yeah, he had a rough afternoon of it getting that tattoo, so we'll see what he says.
Now, mostly they do with the outline in the 4.5, right? Or do
What's
you
that?
Go in and do any of the gray work? Basically, what you do with the outline, 4.5 hours. Did you do any of the black and gray in it, or just basically the outline?
No, that was with a little bit of shading that had to be done. The black fill in, so it has some shading. There's some shadows in everything else. I threw some shadows into the flame and onto the girls. The line work, of course, was a good portion of it. The sigil of Baphomet, we added some red to it, so it looked like it was bleeding and everything. So there's a little bit of shading. I just think if it's not going to be in color, that we could add a little bit more. But I can understand him wanting to have that pure tattoo look, not so much of an illustration kind of thing. So, but it's up to him. It's his tattoo. I just dig it. It's going to be, I think it's badass for my portfolio. About a year or so ago, I put out the word that I would do a free tattoo I was looking at getting 24 people lined up. The point being that, you know, we would go ahead and if they had an idea, whatever it was, that I dug the idea, all they had to do is they would have to let me do the tattoo design. So whatever their idea was, I come up with the design. You know, they'd have a little bit of input or what have you, but I would come up with the design, and then I'd be able to tattoo it, and it had to be big. I mean, it had to be, you know, a back piece or, you know, a half sleeve, that kind of thing, that kind of size.
Yeah, I remember that whole thread you did, man, back in the day.
Yeah. Well, I had a few takers, you know, come up, you know, people who were interested, but only a couple of them actually panned out. What I discovered is that when you offer something to someone for free, well, they don't really see the value in it, or rarely do they see the value in it. Like I had a guy that he was going to get this Grim Reaper design, and this Grim Reaper design shows up on my blogs and on the website and things like that. And you know, designed it up, and he thought it was just amazing. He thought it was going to be badass. But come the day of the tattoo appointment, he decides that he's going to go to Colorado and get baked at some fucking marijuana party. I don't know. Which might have been a big deal. Right. If you're a pot smoker, it might have been a big deal. The only fucking problem was that your tattoo artist, who was waiting to do this tattoo and everything else, he's expecting you that day, and you didn't bother calling until the day of the tattoo. So I don't put up with that kind of shit, and he hasn't heard from me, and I haven't heard from him since. So,
also, you have to look at it from a societal perspective as well. If someone's offering something for free, people tend to question it a bit more than if you would actually label an amount on it.
Right. Well, and I do so many tattoos, you know, getting paid to do the tattoos. The only problem with the tattoos that I do is that, you know, all takers, basically. If you can get an appointment scheduled with me, I'll tattoo pretty much anything you want. So it's a lot of butterflies, a lot of, you know, hearts and, you know, stuff like that. But just
a lot of gay bullshit. Yeah, I get the point.
Right. It's not reflective of my artwork. And I wanted to do more, you know, putting those that type of artwork out, especially when I advertise. When I put an ad out there and go, here's the type of artwork I do, well, then those are the clients I end up attracting. So like makes like, and that was the whole point of all that. But anyways, we're getting on topic right at the beginning of the show, typical. we're going to be talking tonight about the future, and more specifically, the different trends that we're witnessing right now, and how we project that these trends will pan out, and And I think maybe what we'll do is we might extend this into two shows, depending on how this goes tonight. We're going to talk about what we see going on right now and what we think might happen. And then in another show next, I don't know, we might, I actually might adjust the schedule because I kind of have everything else scheduled out, but, you know, fuck it, I can adjust everything.
Please screw that, your ideas up.
Right, no, that's our problem, though. I can bump it out or I can move things around. But what we'll do next week is we'll talk about what things we'd like to see implemented, the kind of things that we'd like to see happen. And I guess we should start with a little bit of, some basics as to what we got going on right now. The Occupy movement has been big in the news over the last week. It appears to be a coordinated effort among cities. I know there was one story where some mayor or some district attorney or something like that kind of let it slip that there was a coordinated effort, you know, whether they meant locally or city by city, to move people or to shake up the Occupy movement, to get them out of the different, you know, areas that they're occupying and to force a break in their 24-hour occupation. The folks were moved out of the Occupy Wall Street. They were forced out and told not to return with tents and sleeping bags, citing, you know, a fire hazard or something of that nature. Of course, Occupy Oakland has had all the violence that it's had going on. Portland's going through the same kind of thing. Here in Austin.
Denver's completely broken up as well.
Right. Here in Austin, they had – go ahead.
It basically went Oakland, Denver, and another city basically. Within a 3 to 4 day span.
Right. And there's people making the point that they're not camping out. They are they're occupying. This is a protest. They're just there. And I know here in Austin there are city ordinances about even sitting or laying down the sidewalk. So if you didn't have you could technically be in violation of the law if you were sitting on the sidewalk, in the evening hours, doing the occupation. So It's just kind of weird that, especially with Bloomberg, I think it's the mayor of New York or whoever, telling the Occupy folks initially that they could be in the park for as long as they wanted to be in the park, that he was going to make no effort to, to push them out or move them around or anything. And now we see this, change of heart or change of strategy. On the other side of things, we got the Tea Party movement. We got the big GOP presidential nomination kind of event. I don't even know what the hell is going on with those folks anymore. You got Herman Cain with the allegations of sexual harassment. Newt Gingrich, he's got his own history. And then you got, Herman Cain, the whole allegation of sexual harassment is not so much a big deal in my mind. I mean, that just says, hey, I want to vote for a president who likes to fuck. I mean, that's a guy I can understand. But the thing that he was at some executive board of press agents or something like that, and they quizzed him on what he thought about Obama's policies in regards to Libya. And he had
wasn't
to pause
Rick
for
Perry?
A moment.
That was Rick Perry.
Was this? No, that was Herman Cain. This is today. Today or yesterday.
There was something to do with your governor down there in Texas as well at one of the basically the debates where he basically didn't even know what the foreign policy was. He said he had to look it up.
Yeah. Perry's been shitting on himself ever since he joined in the debate situation. But Herman Cain was the guy that if I thought something would get done in the GOP, that Herman Cain was going to be the man to do it. But today he's asked, or yesterday he's asked about what he thought about Obama's policies in Libya. And Obama or Cain actually struggled to, come up with an answer. His argument being, his excuse was he only had 3 or 4 hours sleep. That there's a lot of different things going on in his head, and honestly, the whole foreign—that's his weakness—is foreign affairs. But we got a president of the United States that said, there were 57 states, so it's not unusual for these politicians to kind of have their heads up their ass. Okay, so but the thing being is that you got a president, a sitting president, and a coming president right now, whose own party might not reelect him. You've got the opposing party who they can't figure out who they want, and anybody they vote for is going to leave a bad taste in your mouth. So it's all kind of up in the air, and you've got these different polls coming out. The gap between in income, the gap in income between 35-year-olds and 65-year-olds is wider than it has ever been. The gap between the low-income side of the house and the high-income side of the house is wider than it's ever been. And what I see going on is that the real gap that all these things are pointing to is that the gap between the people who are comfortable with the status quo and the gap and the people who are not comfortable with the status quo, that's the gap that's widening. That's the
yep.
the shift we see going on right now. So that kind of tells us where we're at. And this is a worldwide situation. It's not just here in the United States, it's not just in the
yep.
Middle East, not just in Europe, it's everywhere. And it also suggests how linked we are as a world community anymore. You know, 40, 50 years ago, what happened in this, you know, what happened in Thailand with the tsunami or whatever, you know, that would have been Thailand's business. We would have heard, it would have been a little blurb on the backside of, you know, the B section in the newspaper. And because of our connectivity, though, it is now, it was a major news story. Greece
yep.
falls, you know, and what that would mean to us 50 years ago is that we just can't go vacation in Greece. The Egyptians, and this is the whole thing in the Middle East. I mean, when Herman Cain was asked that question, what do you think of the Libyan policy? The whole thing in the Middle East, the whole thing as far as any fucking war, any fucking conflict, as far as I'm concerned, is we should have stayed the hell out of it. If we haven't learned our lesson
yep.
with, you know, Saddam Hussein, with Osama bin Laden, with all these different people, you know, when we pick sides and provide armament or whatever, we just end up getting fucked. It's because we fuck ourselves. It's because we're the first ones to have ourselves back.
Here was the hilarious thing. We went in there to kill Saddam. We got him. We sure as shit did. We got him right out of his little hole and killed him, hung him. You know what happened, though? Within about a week, a vacuum formed. And what happened? Utter chaos in Iraq.
Right.
Who the hell didn't
right.
see that coming? Really. You take out the leader
right.
who was basically keeping all these people the fuck out of his country. You kill him, what's going to happen? It's going to be a
right.
huge run over the border.
Which, and the way that our foreign policy should be set up is if we're going to play that kind of game, and we used to, if we're going to play the kind of game where we're going to dictate how different foreign, you know, regimes are set up, you don't send in your military. You don't send in all of your forces. You send in a kill team, basically. They put a bullet in whoever's head and disappear. You let the fucking civil war happen. You let the sides fight over who's going to be, you know, who's going to take control of the country. And then when whoever ends up coming up on top, when the dust settles and you've got a new government in place, whoever's running the shit, the president of our nation gives that guy a phone call and says, hey, man, congratulations on your victory in whatever fucking country you're from. Keep in mind what happened to the last guy. And then you hang up on him. You know, click, you just hear silence. Yeah, yeah. So if you need to, so the guy knows, okay, you're in the big boy club now. You either play the fucking game or look for one day there being a bullet in your head because you're not untouchable where you're at.
We as a nation also shouldn't put these damn dictators in power to begin with.
Right. Well,
dude, we actually have quite a few times. We have put dictators in power in other countries.
Right.
We basically give
right.
them a throne.
I guess what I was going to say is it's when we put them in power, that's when it's problematic. When we determine who the dictator is going to be, that's the issue. Okay, when the dictator rises to power on his own and his people, either through lack of will to oust him, for accepting whatever his edicts are, or whatever the excuse is, it's their problem. So if that dictator is willing to play ball, he plays ball. And it's just a matter of, you know, hey, that's the way they do things in Libya. That's the way they do things in Egypt. That's the way they do things in, you know, wherever the fuck they're from. And, you know, hell, I'm here, you could argue that we have a similar system. It's just that our front man gets switched out every 48 years, okay? I challenge people to show me the difference between the real difference, the substantial difference between the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, the down the line. Show me the substances difference. They're all managing the same shit. They're all working for the same people, and it's not us. And that's the problem.
I just see it as a shorter-term dictatorship.
Well, it's a long-term dictatorship with a different guy as the head of state. It's when we talk about a president has no fucking power. I mean, he's the front man for the people that do have power. You know, he might be able to say some shit. He might be able to influence some things in certain directions. He might present a particular viewpoint or agenda. But the reality is, like a fucking Perry. You mentioned Governor Perry. Perry talked about how when he gets into becomes president of the United States, he's going to slash Congress's their year annual salary in half.
Well, oh yeah, he ain't gonna get elected. No, he ain't gonna. No, he ain't gonna get elected over that one. No.
Even if he got elected, even if the man got elected, does not determine the income of these legislators, of these politicians. He has no ability to do what he's talking about doing. He would have to go to Congress and go, hey, you guys, how about you guys vote and decide to cut your incomes in half? How about it?
You know what's great, though?
That's all he can do.
Here's the great thing, though. But it makes a damn good soundbite for the late-night news, doesn't it? It makes a great soundbite. Everyone, all these little, you know, basically, let's call the media a puppet. You know, that's just pretty much what they're becoming these days, is a puppet. Basically, they're going to run that sound clip. They're going to discuss and be like, woohoo, he's going to do this for us. He's going to do this in Washington. And that's the message they're going to pass on to the American people. Because basically,
right.
American people overall are stupid. We like to sit in our school holes and do nothing else.
They're convinced that there's some accountability in government, and there is none. You know, you say whatever it is you're going to say to be elected, and then you got 3.5 years before you have to really worry about this shit again. So, and, you know, if you're a congressman, you know, 5.5 years, and as long as you keep your name out of the news, you know, as long as you're not, you know, as long as you're not caught in some fucking hotel room with money in a freezer and a 16-year-old prostitute, well, then odds are you're just going to say, vote for me, because I'm the guy you voted for last time. And people will go, okay, yeah, let's vote for that guy. Yeah. Right. Right. You remember me? Hell, who are you? I'm your congressman. I'm your senator. Oh, really? Yeah, I'm the guy that's been keeping you in the exact same place you are since 6 years ago. Vote for me again. Okay. Because the other guy... What's that?
What is it about Newt Gingrich? He keeps throwing his goddamn hat in. The guy is too old, a little bit over on the overweight side, and a complete dolt.
He's seen by the Conservative Party as brilliant. He's got a bunch of books out there about history. He's a historian. I respect him as a historian. I respect his point of view to a certain extent. But he's not the only one writing those books. He's got ghostwriters. He's got, you know, he knows the political system. He knows the political machine. So if you need somebody that's going to be a perfect puppet, Newt Gingrich has an asshole already fitted to allow several hands to climb up and manipulate his mouth. Okay? So, you know, and they're all fucking puppets. It's just which one can you get your hand in most comfortably? So Newt Gingrich is a more comfortable puppet than, say, Rick Perry or, you know, Herman Cain or who have you. Oh, you know, Michelle Bachmann, you know, who knows? She might be able to get a couple hands up in there.
A few over 20, too. I mean, shit.
Right,
they
right,
might
exactly.
Go to the cold. They can still get up there.
Right. All right. So we're going to be talking about these. So this is the situation we're in. We got other countries, and this is the other thing. The United States and a lot of these political trends, a lot of these social trends, the United States is, I would say, a decade to two decades behind most of the rest of the world. That we have, since the inception of our country, we have benefited from the fact that we're kind of isolated. We got an ocean on either side of us. That, you know, back before the days of jetliners and everything else, it was hard to get over to the United States and do shit. You had to take a boat. You had to be committed to going and doing that. So most of the world didn't give much of a fuck about what was going on in the United States. That's why we're able to remain neutral in World War II up until fucking Pearl Harbor. So we've had the benefit of being kind of isolated from all this shit. So as the world economy starts falling apart, as, you know, different political, you know, ideas have been tried out and run into the ground, the United States has been able to coast along for about 200 years, you know, under this kind of self-enforced delusion of true exceptionalism. And I would argue that the United States, there is some exceptionalism to the United States. The U.S. ideology, the spirit of our founding, is exceptional. But we can't deny the realities of our world, especially as this global environment becomes more and more inclusive, as it becomes more and more tighter. And, you know, what happens in Greece affects folks here in Texas, affects folks in Michigan, affects folks. It's a trickle-down kind of thing. I predicted at a bar in a discussion with my father and my brother that you know, this is back, my dad was used to an income of $25 to $30 an hour working in a factory. You know, so he doesn't have a college education. You know, he was making, back in the 80s, 90s, he was making, you know, it was big money. It was good money. Okay, $25, $30 an hour, and that was going to be around forever. And I predicted that, right, well, I predicted that what we were seeing was an equalization of incomes around the world. As third world countries and poor countries' incomes and the standards of living rose, the standards of living in the United States and the income of the United States would have to go down to meet them. Now, there's only so much resource in the world. My father told me I was out of my mind. Okay? And yet, here we are. And it's necessary, I think, for our whole society as a global species that we have that averaging of incomes and we have that averaging of lifestyles. But that means that people here in the United States who have been riding high on the hog, who have been privileged, you know, on the backs of people across the world, we're the ones who are going to have to make the biggest adjustment. You know, our situation is not going to get better, it's going to get worse. So, and that's, I mean, this is one of the things we're going to be talking about tonight. I want to throw an analogy out there to give you an idea of kind of what my thinking is, because I don't think, and we kind of talked about this towards the beginning of the show when we were waiting for the show to actually come on, I don't think there's going to be a major shift in the way things are done. I believe that any shift is going to be slow, it's going to be ponderous, and it's going to be hard for those of us who are fighting the good fight to really have an impact. And this is why. Imagine that the way that our society runs right now, it's a giant fucking elephant. It's a huge goddamn elephant, and it's just walking in its line. And elephants around the world are dying out, not because of human intervention, but because as an animal, as a species, they've reached their evolutionary peak, basically. They're not breeding. They're not suited to the new environment, basically. So they're dying out naturally. One of the few species to actually be dying out naturally. So this is what our society is. It's ponderous. It's slow. It's, you know, stoic in its movements. But this particular elephant is unique in that, well, first of all, it's being attacked by ants. You know, these ants are the Tea Party movement. These ants are the Occupy Washington movement. These ants are, you know, revolutions and religious movements and people thinking about different types of economies and people talking about different types of political systems. They're ants, okay? These ants, it's a fucking elephant, all right? So while you might be able to irritate the elephant, you might be able to, you know, annoy the elephant's going to keep going in the direction it wants to go in. And it might just, what it might do every once in a while is swat your ass. All right? So you might be able to urge the elephant one way or another a little bit. It might deviate in its path a little bit, but it's still going to keep going in basically the same direction it wants to go in. Now, yep. this elephant that we're talking about, though, is unique in that it is, in fact, not an elephant. Rather, it is a huge body of ants. And all these ants have been convinced that they're an elephant. Okay? They've been taught to believe that they are an elephant. They've been taught to think that they're an elephant. And they do whatever their job is in that elephant. They're the foot pad. They're the tusk. They're the eye. They're whatever. That's what they've been taught to do. They believe they're an elephant. So these ants that we got running around that don't recognize that, you know, this elephant, they don't agree with this elephant, some of them are free of it. Some of them realize that we're ants. Some of them realize, okay, we're part of this elephant, but it's not fair that most of us are leg and foot and skin and bullshit. We want to be more like the brain part of the elephant, okay? We want to be more of those brain ants, okay? So we recognize this. And most people are in complete denial. They're ants going, nope, I'm an elephant. I'm part of an elephant. I'm an elephant. That's all it is, okay? So this is what we're facing, I think. Now, what I see happening, well, the direction I think I see things going in is that these ants right now, they're fighting to change the elephant, to change the direction it's walking in, to change the way that it operates and it moves and things like that. These ants that are making this adjustment with this elephant are in – what they need to do, in my opinion, is wake up and go, we're ants. We don't need to be an elephant. We can step away from this. You know, and since we have this knack for being other kinds of animals, you know, if we want to be a snake, we'll be a snake. If we want to be a rat, we'll be a rat. And let's gather up in these different groups. Let's have all the ants that want to be a snake come over here. Let's have all the rats that want to, or the, all the ants that want to be rats and go over there. You know, what have you. Okay? That the only way you're going to stop this elephant to make a shift in itself, if you think you should give a shit about the elephant, which my argument is that no, you shouldn't. You should turn away, because all you're doing is you're wasting your time, basically. You're irritating something that will not change without something outside your power to make happen happening. Okay? I say you walk away. The only way that this situation will change, if there's some sort of major disaster that forces this elephant made up of all these little ants, all these little people making up this great big tedious society, forcing it to fall apart and then restructure itself. So if we're looking at trends,
the only thing I could even see that would actually do that would be a complete collapse of the already collapsed economic system.
Well, there's all kinds of things that could happen that could cause that kind of degeneration, that could cause that kind of major shift. And the
argument, also, Jason, I have to disagree with you on your whole elephant analogy and your idea of it being basically what my opinion is with how this country is going to be. It's going to be basically smoke screen's going to get thicker. Coming out of the smoke screen, they're going to, you know, basically the ones behind are going to be like, things are changing. You know, look at this. You know, things are going to change on the things are going to appear to change. But behind the scenes, behind that nice, you know, thick smoke screen, things stay the same. They basically put out an illusion of things changing. That's what we're looking at, especially with the current trends now. We're looking at being, you know, just illusioned once more and again and again and again.
Well, that's the way it's always been. And it's, you know, that's in line with what I'm saying. As long as people stay convinced that society is working, as long as people stay convinced, is they're kept content. Yeah, things are getting better. You know, back in the fucking 60s and 70s. Yeah, you people want equal rights here. Have them. Have equal rights. Are they really equal? You know, when your rights have to be given to you, when equality has to be handed to you, are you really equal? No. Hell no. You know, are you any better off? No, what they did was they said, oh, you know what, we'll take a section of, you want to be equal with the whites? All right, fine, we'll take this great big section of white people here and we'll make them poor. Now you're equal. You know, that's what we see going down. So it's exactly what you're saying, that shift, that whatever they need to do to pacify and to keep people believing that the system's working and that they're participants in it and it's good, that's what will happen.
And looking at that happening, probably maybe a few months right before elections, I'm thinking that Obama's going to put out something pretty decent sized that's going to basically pacify people until the, you know, next figurehead gets in there, and he'll, you know, he'll keep it going for a good couple of years, and then all of a sudden people are going to be like, what the fuck? That's kind of how I see it going, actually.
Oh yeah, I think Obama's going to come out and go, you know what? We want to absolve foreclosure debt on houses, and we want to absolve student loan debt. That's what we want to do. So his administration, if he's reelected, that's what he's going to do. He heard the people. He heard the people when they said, you know, you bailed out the banks, and you bailed out the auto industry, and you bailed out these other companies. The people need a bailout. So I think he's going to offer some kind of bailout and just get reelected. Now, once he's reelected, he doesn't have to keep a fucking promise he makes. He doesn't have to live up to the damn thing he said.
I don't see him being reelected, though. I see him, you know, a couple of months before, you know, elections come, he's going to do something really large to basically pave the way for the next candidate coming into the White House. That candidate's going to keep that going for a good couple of years, and everything's going to fall. That whole smokescreen will fall on that particular event.
So do you think he'll actually, will he set up the sword for the GOP candidate to fall upon, or do you think he'll be setting things up for that next candidate to continue, you know, carrying forward with the overarching master plan?
You know, I'm actually saying number two, man. I really am. I don't see things getting better for quite a while. It'd be nice if they did, but
right.
I haven't seen anything good coming out of it.
Right, right. I still think the game is, you know, you've got one side versus the other side. I guess think about it this way. I like to use analogies. Republicans. Yeah, you got the Republicans and you got the Democrats. I watch football. All right. So, you know, it doesn't matter who's playing the game. It doesn't matter if it's the Colts or the Bears. Those are the teams in my household. It doesn't matter if it's the Colts or the Bears, the NFL wins. Okay.
Yeah.
And the NFL could give a shit about whether I got enough food to eat, whether fucking the lights are on in my house or whatever. They give a goddamn. So, you know, they don't care if you want the Colts to win or you want the Bears to win, just as long as you watch the game. It doesn't matter. Right. The one thing they don't want you to do is shut the shit off. So our political system,
advertisements,
you know,
go down the drain when you do that kind of shit.
Right. Well, our political system is the same way. I argue that, you know, the government, you know, whether you can point to a body of people running the thing, or whether the thing is just a self-perpetuating system all, you know, on its own, which I lean towards the latter. Okay. It doesn't matter who wins, Republican or Democrat. They can only act within a certain parameter. The checks and balances are set up so that they keep going in the same direction no matter what. You keep up capitalism. You keep up this idea of, you know, you got to work for 40 years. You got to, you know, you can't go out and do things on your own. You have to go through the middleman. You have to pay your taxes. You have to pay the laws. You keep people going in that direction with no hope of ever breaking free of it. The people that are fighting these things right now, you know, again, I look at the ONA, the different Nexians that are there, the Occupy movement, the Anonymous movement, things like that. They're actually demonstrating, in a way, how to resist. The thing I question about all those movements is, again, should they be resisting and trying to change the system? I mean, because a lot, you know, regardless of what their tactics are, most of them are using the system to try to change the system. One way or another. Or should they just do enough to establish that they can break away from it and break away? You know, go ahead.
Basically, that's the thing, though, man. It's basically going to take one of these groups to completely prove that breakaway is possible before anyone else will do it. People overall need that visual aid. They actually get the idea in their own head. They basically need the actual proof of a meme to actually become part of Memeplex.
Well, here's I guess the question I would ask. If you could break away from the system right now, if you could make a clean break, would it matter that nobody else could break away with you? To you?
No. No.
Right. Right. So here's my thinking, okay? If you demonstrate if you show the world that you can live outside the system, a la David Koresh and Waco, a la Ruby Ridge, you know, a number of different communities, all right? Once you establish that you're able to separate and live distinctly from the system sees you as a threat. Because, again, going back to that initial analogy, you're an elephant made up of a bunch of ants. Well, if the ants start figuring out that they don't have to be part of the elephant falls apart, and the elephant doesn't want to fall apart. So I think that we need to break away. We need to actually start looking for another way, you know, to live our lives. But I think there's something to be said for these, and there are a number of communities within the society, within the system, that they're just distinct enough to attract the attention of those people who truly want to live separately from the society, but also just in line with the system enough that they keep from being fucked with. They're like ninja societies, basically. And I can't think of a better word for it. I'm sorry. But they're, you know, they're in the society, but not in the society, you know? Nobody considers them, the society doesn't consider them a threat because, hell, they still pay their taxes. You know,
there's
even
ways around that, actually.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Churches do it. I mean, fuck, yeah. You know, you form a church and you just say everybody here is clergy.
Shit, man. Greatest idea ever. Get an RV, basically paint a big, huge cross on the side of it. You're a rolling church. Who can say otherwise?
Right. As long as you give the facade of playing along with the game, okay, then you accomplish it. Then you can have whatever it is within your walls. Morgan Hell says, "In this world, but not of this world." Yeah, that's kind of the ideology that I'm talking about. That's the only way. That's the way to get away with it now. And what you're doing then is that you, as your society, what you're doing is preparing for the day, because this thing, this system we're seeing, it is falling apart. Every step forward shakes more pieces of it off. Every step forward, every reach for something, for more power, every reach for more restrictions shakes it apart a little bit more. That eventually it's all going to come down. Unfortunately, and again, it's unfortunately what I expect to see, what I expect to happen is there has to be something major, a major war, a major outbreak of disease, a major natural disaster that will cause enough of a shaking apart to allow the people to define how that system reemerges or what form it takes in the future. Otherwise, we're just going to have the elephant 2.0 down the road.
And,
so,
you know, I hate to say it, man, I think the Elephant 2.0 is almost inevitable. I mean, dude, it only took us 200 years to take the American dream and get it, you know, of the Founding Fathers to get it just so fucking warped. It didn't take us any time at all. And we're already starting to basically deteriorate, whereas countries that we, you know, came from are still, well, not going strong, but they're at least stronger than us.
Well, and it's exactly what I'm talking about, though. Those systems have been in place for, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years or more. You know, the English Empire, the European way of life, the tribes of the Ottoman Empire, all these different things have a long chain. So the United States was an exceptional experiment. It was the society that tried to separate itself. Okay? And it took 200 years to bring us back into the fold.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're basically where we started.
Right. And we've chosen it. We've been guided, but it's what we've chosen as a people. That it's better to it's better to play it safe and to follow along and to obey the rules than to take the risks that our forefathers took and stand up to tyranny, whatever form it takes. Even if it's tyranny that says, we're here to help you, we're from the government. So,
you know, I kind of wonder what would happen if we actually went and took over a very small country and basically populated that country. Just a small one, doesn't mean that major. Unless you want to take over Australia, but I think they'd be pretty pissed.
Well, you know, Australia or New Zealand probably has some of the most liberal and progressive mentalities left in the world. So if you're going to go someplace, plus the last time I checked in Australia, there were more women than men. So the attitudes about sex in Australia, are a little bit different. A guy walks into a bar and gets hit on. You know, the drinks are bought for him. That could just be bullshit. I was, you know, smoke going up my ass. When I was flying into Germany, the sergeant was on the plane with us, told us all the young privates, that, when you get to Germany, get off the plane, you'll see people fucking in the bushes, but these women are wild. And then hanging out with German people, they told me that I hear the American girls, they put out the drop of the hat. I told them, yeah, absolutely. if we're talking about the future, the way things are going, the trends that we're seeing, more and more people are going to become discontent. That's the one thing I can guarantee. But as long as we keep, and the other thing that we're going to see is that while we become discontent, more people will find ways to not just be pissed off at the government, but be pissed off at each other.
Yeah.
And that's by design. that this system wants its, you know, its enemies to be at each other's throats. You know, the Tea Party and the Occupy movements, they have more in common than not in common. Yet, get them to organize together. It's not going to fucking happen. Get them to meet in the same building for a discussion about the commonality. It's not going to happen. It's not fucking going to happen. And it's because they think they oppose one another ideologically. They do not.
I agree.
So, my advice to people who might be listening to the show, as far as, and this, because this is the thing I've been wrestling around with. I mean, we talk every Sunday for 2 hours. It almost seems like, you know, we're beating the same topic over and over again about the head and everything else. The Friday show just points out more and more issues, more and more problems with, you know, with our society, with our system. We're all talking about all these issues, all these different problems, but we're not really talking about how to go about
viable solutions.
Right, dealing with it. You know, what choices do we have? What options do we have? Like, I was reading today an excellent article on capitalism. And this is by another fellow. This is on dangerousminds.net, so if anybody wants to look this up. This is by another fellow, his name escapes me at the moment, who talked about how capitalism is like cigarettes. So another fellow who likes analogies. Okay? He said that the reason you say capitalism is like cigarettes is because you know it's bad for you. You know there's nothing good about it, okay? And that the Republicans like their cigarettes unfiltered. Okay, the Democrats, they want to put a filter on it. They want to pretend it's a little bit safer, a little bit cleaner, but it's still a cigarette. And if anybody thought, but if you sat there and said, you know what, the cigarette's bad for you, nobody sits there and says, well, let's just ban cigarettes. If the cigarettes are so bad, let's just get rid of them. They go, no, let's not do that. Let's try to.
No, too much money in it. Way too much money in cigarettes.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yep.
It's the same thing with capitalism. You know, in capitalism, there's only one, you know, one result. A bunch of really, really poor people at the bottom of the pyramid and a very few very wealthy people at the top. That's the end result. That's the only thing that can result from capitalism. No matter, you can't tweak capitalism to make it better, make it more fair. It just doesn't work that way. Eventually, there's a handful of people who control and own everything. That's the way it works.
And either way, one side or the other gets screwed. And it's generally not the upper echelon people. They're usually the ones who might take a tiny little fraction of a cut that's basically just a drop in the ocean.
Well, capitalism is your most successful investments, your most successful businesses, they make the money. So whoever has the most gold eventually makes the rules. So if you got a business and you're doing well, then you've got enough income, you can do one of two things. You can get bought out, you know, take the money and run, or you can buy something else, buy your rival, okay? And when you bought enough of your rivals that you're starting to look like a monopoly, well, then what do you do? Well, you invest in some other business. You join up with other investors. So eventually you work your way up the food chain until you're at the top. Well, there's only so much room at the top. And that's the way capitalism works. The only thing this article didn't do, while presenting a very valid argument, what the argument didn't do is offer a solution, offer an alternative. And that's, you know, that's the issue I see. I mean, I look at again the Occupy movement. They want pure democracy. Okay. Well, we've seen
there's
pure
no such
democracy,
thing as democracy
in action. Well, there has been democracies where everybody gets a vote, everybody gets a say. The problem with pure democracies is that more often than not, they're wrong. More often than not, when they make a decision, they regret the decisions they made. It's, you know, it's whatever decision was most convenient at the moment. It's mob mentality. So, you know, there's a failure there. But again, what are the solutions? What are the alternatives? The representative republically set up, what did it result in? Career politicians. You know, these assholes, when the government first got set up, they weren't meant to go to Washington and live there for the rest of their fucking lives. They were meant to be
most
there
them went
3 months.
In. Yep.
Right, 3 months
most
out of the
them
year.
Went in with yep. Exactly.
Right, they were in a hurry to get the fuck out of there because they had shit to do, real shit, important shit. You know, politics was a hobby. Now that's your way of life, and it's generational. You know, you get into
politics.
If you can get into politics, you stay in, and your family stays in.
Hell, classic example, Kennedys.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, fuck all the presidents of the United States related to King John, except for one, Van Buren, I think. You know, it's there. You know, the leaders of Europe, all of them are related. You know, even the people that are running France right now, you know, got the good sense to kill off all their fucking aristocrats.
Gotta love incest, man.
They had a little bit of noble blood. They became the power base again. It's the same fucking thing over and over again. So, you know, solutions. I'd like to walk away today, tonight. I would like to walk away from capitalism. I would have no problem tattooing for free. I've offered free tattoos. You know, but then
don't you basically work more on the trade aspect these days, more so than actual monetary?
Well, the only way I can work in trade is if what they're trading me has some monetary value. Right. So I have to be able to take, because it's whatever they're trading, it's usually something that I can't use directly. Right. So
makes sense.
And you know what good? Right. So, and I wish, you know, I could, you know, give me an hour's worth of your labor, and I'll give you an hour's worth of tattoo. You know, what is it you do? Do you raise crops? Do you carry water? Do you purify water? What do you do? Do you generate electricity? What do you do? Because I need those things. No. They're like a cubicle slug, like I used to be. You know, I answer fucking phones at AT&T. You know, I pump gas. You know, and if I give you gasoline or I give you free telephone service, I'm gonna get fired.
So,
until there are enough people that have something to trade, it's hard to set up some sort of barter economy.
In fact, that's the funny thing, though, man. Back in the day, I hear the stories from my grandparents, even, that you had these nice little tight-knit communities, and they would all help each other out. I mean, the barn needs done. Everyone comes in on a weekend. The whole community comes in. They have a big, huge cookout, and they do the whole barn. They paint it. They do everything in a weekend. That's how basically it was done. You helped your neighbor out. You basically bartered with each other. That's how it was all done back in the day.
Right. A doctor comes into a small community to practice medicine. Why does he want to practice medicine? Because he enjoys the practice of medicine. He sees it as a challenge. He sees it as a service that he can give to his community. And what does he take in exchange for the practice of medicine? Food. Crops.
Yep.
You know, let me come and eat dinner at your house every Friday. You know, of course, so I can get around. Right. The school marm, the teacher, comes into a community. She shows up, and the community builds a school so that, you know, we got a teacher. Let's build a school so we got some place for our kids to learn how to read and fucking count. Because I'm tired of, you know, trying to take, I tell my boy Billy to go get me 12 eggs. And who knows what he's going to come back with. So we need some help here, right? But they built this school. They exactly what you're talking about. They pull, you know, they pull boards that they don't need and everything else. They bring the shit together and they make it happen. And what does the teacher get paid? There's a reason that you know, students used to bring their teacher an apple, because that's the only way that chick was going to eat. You know, you're not trying to curry favor. You're paying for your education.
And that's some funny shit, man.
Right, but why? What, the teacher loved doing what she did. You know, so there'd be a lot of, you know, it'd be very apparent quickly what services are essential. And, you know, and I know that, like, with tattooing, I know it would be probably, well, I'd be fine here, I think, that there are enough people who want tattoos that I would do all right. But it'd be a hell of a life to live, man. I've read about people who, you know, They convert a van to a little tattoo studio, and they travel around. I mean, that'd be awesome. Yeah, as soon as all my kids are old enough not to need my ass, then it's something I might do. I don't know. But it's Morgan Hill, and they were tied together by common religious values on Sundays. Well, and that's, I think that's one of the points that TC and I have been making on the Sunday show. that we need to get back to that, not the religious values per se, but where you have communities with a shared ideology. They have a reason to look out for one another because they agree with a certain set of values. They agree with a certain way
yep.
of doing things. And then so that they can, you know, they know to look out for each other. What we've got going on right now, this massive thing, you know, we call society, it's antithetical to, you know, human experience. You know, we learn to trust our own tribe, and our tribe can only handle so many people. Or eventually, you've got distrust. So, we got about 8 minutes left. I don't know, man. We're fairly in agreement. You know, regardless of what form we think it's going to be going in, that it's
yep.
going to continue to trend the way it's been trending. That despite all this action, all it does is, you know, the new revolutionaries. These people have been in place since the very beginning.
Here's also the funniest thing about it, man. Back in the 60s and 70s, you had your hippies. You had your pot-smoking mm-hmm. hippies. What did they grow up to be? Politicians. What is activists going to grow up to be?
Well, back during the colonial times, the revolutionaries wanted to be free of the king. And when the revolutionaries came to power, you had revolutionaries who wanted to stay with the king, wanted to stay with the King of England, or wanted to adopt their own king. You've always had dissidents. You've always had people that disagreed with those who were in power. And it's just part of the system. It's just part of the way it works, because then what can you do? Well, if you're in power, you can show how you contrast with these other people. I mean, that's what the people on Wall Street are doing right now. You know, look at these idiots out there in tents. Who wants to live like that? You know, this is just a sign of our society falling apart. That if we don't keep the status quo, we're all going to end up like that.
Well, maybe the status quo needs to be completely gone.
What's that?
Maybe the status quo needs to be gone. Maybe it just needs to be reset.
Right. Well, but as soon as you do, especially in the system we have right now, as soon as you replace the status quo with something else, that becomes the status quo, and there's going to be dissidence. There's going to be, you know, resistance. It's just figuring out. We've had other societies in the human species that have managed to exist for thousands of years with minimal internal conflict.
They're smart. They killed any conflict off as soon as it showed itself. Shit.
Or when you look at, you know, the Native Americans, you keep your numbers, your individual tribes, to a manageable group. And when you're dealing with conflict, well, the reason you war is because you need food, or you know, you need materials, you need resources, not because you disagree with the ideology of that other tribe. You know, what that other tribe does, that's their fucking business. So, and I'm not a huge fan of, don't get by any stretch of the imagination, of the Native American way of life. It's interesting, but it's not my way of life. I have friends that were very into the whole Native American shtick, and they were talking about how, you know, how rotten it was for the Europeans to come in here and take their land and blah, 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 blah. And my point to them was, well, you know what? When you get your ass conquered, that's kind of the way it works. Welcome to evolution.
We need,
you know?
Yep, we needed a place to go. We sat our ass down, and we basically took and just slit their throats and called it a day. We needed a place to go, man. The Indians had a nice little place for us to sit, and we sat.
The conversation we had, there's some other thing going on. There's somebody who pointed out that, you know, if you didn't like what was going on in your neighbor's house, if you thought it was morally wrong, well, don't you have a responsibility to go in there and do something about it? And the answer was hell no. Hell no, do you have responsibility. Matter of fact, you have more responsibility to keep your fucking business, mind your own goddamn business, and keep your nose to your whatever it is you got going on. And you know, well, the argument was, well, what if it was in your house? What if it came after you and yours? I mean, well, then yeah, you got something. You got money in the game then. But until it's, you know, actually affecting you, why are you getting involved? So while we don't want to know who our neighbor is in this society, while we don't want to know you know, who we live with, who we live around. We don't care. I don't want to know who my neighbors are. I don't want to know their names or anything else. But we got people out there that go, but you know what? If they're having queer sex in their bedroom, I sure as hell want that shit stopped.
Why?
You don't want to know their name. But if it's two guys or two chicks fucking each other, well, then it matters to you. That matters to you. Or, you know, I could give a shit about those people in the inner city and everything else, but if they're killing babies, I want to have that shit stopped. If they're having abortions.
Why? Population control, beautiful.
Right, yeah, right. How does that affect you? That's the thing. Again, when we're talking about a system that sets the different sides against one another, they don't want you to know who each your neighbors are, but they want you to think that, you know, these different neighbors, these different people are bad, and that you should obey the system, whatever that system is, in order to keep the bad people from to keep the women who are getting abortions from coming around to your house at night and, you know, putting their voodoo on you, whatever these poor women are going to do, you know, making your daughter think that abortions are okay, whatever evil they're going to commit, you know, when they come around, you know. These guys who get married, these gay men who get married, they're going to come around and they're going to fuck with your marriage too, you know? How's that? If gay men want to bring that suffering on themselves, well, then they should. I mean, you can fuck it, you know? Get married. And my girlfriend's in the audience right now, and we often have the marriage discussion. We've been together for 8 years and everything, and I don't want her to think that just because I sat there and said that it was suffering that she is in any way out of that conversation, that she now has now. She's not to use that as an excuse against me when I suggest that maybe we should go ahead and do all that. So,
honestly, man, why get married, though? What's the point? Besides security within assets, what's the point?
I didn't want to have this argument on the air. There are benefits. There are monetary benefits to being married. There's kind of the idea in your relationship that you're taking that extra step that, for whatever. And it is. It is bullshit. It is paper. It's a good feeling. But why do you tell, you know, why do you kiss your girlfriend goodbye and tell her you love her before she leaves if you do? You know, why do that? Shouldn't she already know? Should it already be part of the deal? It's the same thing in my mind. It's something that just makes you, you know, maybe feel a little bit stronger in the relationship. So I don't want to disparage everybody that's out there who's married and everything else, you know, especially if you're doing it for the right reasons, because you actually give a goddamn about the person you're with. You know, that's all fine and good. But we've also each had two divorces, so we know that, you know, marriage can be not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we got about, we have 90 seconds left, 60 seconds left now. We're going to have a little change up in the show schedule. If you've been to the ooze.wordpress.com and seen the show schedule for the Luminous, I'm going to bump some things, move some things around tonight. Next week, at Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I just screwed that all up. Next time the show's on Tuesday night, we're going to talk about what we would like to see happen, what form we'd like to see the society take if it were up to Rotten Biohazard and Jason Sorrell to define how things were going to go for everybody else. So,
these two shows are really a great segue for the other stuff we have coming up as well over the next month and a half or whatever it is as well.
Absolutely. So check out the WordPress page. 10 seconds, man. You got anything you want to throw in?
No, man. It's all good. Do the outro.
All right, man. Later.
Later, man.